Hi, this is ETF.com's Exchange Traded Fridays podcast, a weekly podcast covering developments in the ETF industry. My name is Sumeet Roy, and I'm senior analyst for ETF.com.
And I'm Jeff Benjamin, wealth management editor here at ETF.com.
This week, we're talking with Danny Prince, U.S. head of iShares Product Consulting. Danny, great to have you on the show.
Yeah, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So Danny, late last year, iShares launched a suite of target date ETFs into the market. This is the first time in around a decade that we've seen target date ETFs in the US. I want to talk more about the timing of the launch, and I want to dive deeper into the funds. But first, can you tell us a little bit about who these are intended for?
Yeah, happy to dig into those other details, but you know, great starting question here. In October of last year, we were extremely excited to launch, you know, really the industry's only target date ETFs. And you know, if we zoom out a little bit, you know, target date ETFs and the strategies of just target date, they've been really foundational for decades, you know, maybe in a different structure. And I think, you know, what's interesting about target date strategies is really embracing some sound principles around portfolio construction. And that's first, asset allocation is so incredibly important to investors. And that second, that allocation should change over time. It's not just this static sort of mix. And when it changes over time, it should be in line with your risk tolerances to really maximize that risk return trade-off. So your question is, what's so special with target date funds is that they really help investors focus on the long-term. And if you think about some of the just simplest challenges that an investor has, it's really getting started with investing, because investing can be complex. There's management required. And I think, you know, target date ETFs really simplify that equation. So with that said, who are they for? Really, this is for investors looking to invest for retirement and are really looking to simplify the investing equation.
That's great. So I want to dive a little bit deeper into the products now. Like you said, Danny, target date funds have been around for a while. They're extremely popular in the mutual fund industry. I think they have something like $3 trillion in assets under management there. How are your ETFs different from those other products in the target date fund market?
Yeah, that's a great question, because we just talked a little bit about how target date funds, and you mentioned the AUM levels, they're just a tried and true strategy, really embracing that sort of importance, right, that we talked about, asset allocation, shifting that mix over time. You know, but what's different about putting a target date strategy into an ETF? And, you know, when I think about ETFs, I think about, you know, the certain efficiencies and lowering barriers to access for millions of Americans. Now, Sumeet, you know very well, ETFs are generally low cost, generally tax efficient. And in addition to that, ETFs by and large also trade commission free on most platforms. So, you know, these ETFs can really help investors access what was and what is a very popular retirement investment approach, just more efficiently. Just to put some numbers to that, our target date LifePath ETFs come with expense ratios as low as 8 basis points. So these products have really made it easier for people to get started investing for retirement, since, you know, ETFs don't require a minimum initial investment like some mutual funds do. And you can get started with ETFs for just the price of one share. So another aspect to speak through is, I think this is a really cool feature of these ETFs, is that upon reaching retirement, that retirement year, the target date ETFs are expected to transition into a retirement version, so that investors are not only able to invest to retirement, but can invest throughout retirement. Now, I would also be remiss not to mention another key differentiator versus the many strategies that you spoke to, and that's really that these ETFs are actively managed by BlackRock's LifePath team, and this team helped pioneer the first target date ETF over 30 years ago. So really their experience, research, and expertise help back these particular ETFs.
Danny, can you talk about that first target date ETF over 30 years ago? What happened to that?
Yeah, well, Jeff, great question. You know, the BlackRock LifePath Mutual Fund Series continues to exist and gain assets. You know, this franchise is quite large. I think, you know, what's interesting about these ETFs is unlocking that capability in the ETF structure. But those ETFs still exist, you know, perform extremely well. And I think what's interesting about them being actively managed by the same team is really the decades-long experience in seeing the different macro environments shift and help adjust the asset mix. So those initial target date ETFs back 30 years ago have continuously evolved throughout the last few decades to incorporate different asset classes and help hedge against risks, as risks aren't static, they change over time. So if you go back to the initial inception, they continue to evolve. And notably, when we launched these ETFs last year, we're building on the IP of that 30-year experience. Now, most of the existing LifePath strategies do exist in more like DC platforms, where you tend to see more mutual funds than you would see ETFs.
What has changed in the landscape that has inspired BlackRock to launch these target date ETFs now at this point?
Yeah, great question around the landscape. Look, the world has changed in 20 years. And if you think about just the industry growth within ETF, I think that speaks to how the industry has changed. I mean, ETFs went from nascent to mainstream over the last 20 years. I think we can agree on this show here that ETFs are now the regular main feature when it comes to building out a portfolio. So a lot has changed, right? And a lot of what has driven that change is really the spirit of innovation within the ETF industry. It's brought access to more types of investments to the hands of not just professional investors, but everyday investors. So, that has changed. And really, the type of investor has changed as well, not just the strategies available to them. If you go back 30 or 40 years ago, investing for retirement was largely in the hands of employers, which that has gradually shifted to employees through such things like 401k plans. But if you think about the last decade, you've seen really the rapid rise of individual investors without access to workplace plans. So think about the gig economy or small businesses and the like. And really, Jeff, to put some numbers to this, the growing population of self-directed investors now represents almost 12 trillion in AUM. And a substantial portion of that now exists in IRA accounts. And you also have 57 million Americans who don't have access to any kind of retirement plan. And we know when investors have access to a retirement plan, they are 15 to 20 times more likely to invest for retirement. So, really the strategies and the structures and the type of investors have changed. And one more point to add here. If you don't have access to a workplace tax advantage account, so a 401k or a 403b, ETFs can be that useful tool in the toolkit. And you think about how target date ETFs can help those investors that also change jobs more frequently. And what happens is they tend to roll those over into IRAs. So, when we think about what has changed and target date ETFs, we think these are investments that can stick with you as you sort of navigate your career and you move between different platforms.
Right. Good points on the 30-year kind of backstory here, but I'm asking why now with target date ETFs? So when I think of target date, I think of 401k plans, IRAs, qualified accounts. We all know that ETFs have just barely dipped a toe in the water when it comes to getting on 401k plan menus. I guess what I'm asking is there something in the works to get these ETFs kind of a key to the door to the 401k plan menus?
Yeah, I think, good question, right? I kind of remember like about 10 years ago, there was a lot of discussion around, ETFs, potentially penetrating the DC market. And really, for all intents and purposes, that really that hasn't come to full fruition the way that the market, at least opined 10 years ago. There's some structural dynamics, some plumbing issues to work through to sort of make ETFs a part of it. And there are sort of DC 401k platforms that do have ETFs, but by and large, it really hasn't grown too much there. I think your question as to like why now, and it's perhaps less of a DC market and more of like an existential problem when it comes to retirement is, one, do investors have access to a 401k? And I think that's one question we sort of discussed a little bit. And I think there's a lot of investors that don't have access to that traditional. So I think that there's a use case right there. Why now? There's a ton of investors out there. I mentioned 57 million Americans who don't have access to a workplace plan. So that's one. The other is, are 401ks enough to retire? And we all know there's a limit to how much you can contribute to a 401k. It's not an infinite number. And for many investors out there, they want to be able to mirror what they know in their DC platform, in their retirement plan, this idea of putting a number on a retirement date and asset mix shifting towards that. But want to complement that. So to your question, why now? This is about investors without access. This is about investors who are complementing their 401k plans. And those investors that are experiencing IRA rollovers, where we do see more ETFs inside of IRA accounts. So look, I think the why now, a lot of investors are saving for retirement outside of 401ks. We know when you simplify the investing equation, it makes it easier to get started. We know risk is an important consideration that changes out of time. And we know that clients like the simplicity of what they're able to do in one account. They want to mirror that in another. We talked a little bit about the benefits of ETFs, tax efficiency, notably, which means investors can now think about retirement in their brokerage and taxable account. I think, when you think about retirement, it's not just what's in your tax-deferred account, not just what's in your IRA, not what's just in your 401k plan, if you have one. Right? When you think about retirement, it's a collection of investments. Now, in your brokerage account, you're going to have more sensitivity towards taxes. And we all know that ETFs do a really good job of managing for taxes relative to traditional mutual funds. So think about a way to complement what you're doing, but in a more tax-efficient way, in an account that isn't tax sheltered. So, we see a myriad of use cases here for investors, and think the tried and true strategy with the unlock of complementing existing retirement assets is beneficial to investors.
Do you think that these target date ETFs will appeal to financial advisors? I mean, a lot of people argue that target date funds take the advisor out of the equation.
Yeah, maybe less so, right? And to your point, a lot of advisors build asset allocation. They have a deeper understanding of their clients' risk tolerances. So we don't really see this, competing against financial advisors. We see this as potentially being a complement to financial advisors. Every individual situation is different, right? And I think advisors drive a lot of value through just that notion that every client is different and has unique needs. Now, like a target date ETF isn't going to replace the myriad of things that a financial advisor does. Right. And, I think what we've learned over time is that advisors can also use asset allocation products as well. We have a series of core allocation ETFs that exist in the marketplace today. And they have a static asset mix versus, a glide path towards retirement. And quite frankly, a lot of that is held by financial advisors. So, this idea that it competes or will replace a financial advisor, I think is just not in line with how we're seeing implementation of existing asset allocation ETFs today, and doesn't replace a financial advisor, but could complement what a financial advisor does.
Danny, I want to shift away from the target date funds, but I want to stick with active ETFs. BlackRock made a lot of noise last year when you launched the first ETFs managed by Rick Rieder and Tony DeSpirito, who are kind of considered to be star portfolio managers. Can you tell us how successful or not successful those launches have been?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, we've been busy. We've been busy at iShares over the last few years, really sort of continuing this pursuit of unlocking access and, bringing efficiencies that the ETF structure can bring. The regulatory framework changed a few years ago to make active ETFs more efficient to launch and to run and to sort of unlock the capabilities of an ETF. So, given that backdrop, we've been busy. And, you mentioned a couple of our flagship active ETFs that we launched in last year. And we have seen some success. Let me speak to that for just a minute here. We launched BINC, BINC. That's the BlackRock Flexible Income ETF. You mentioned that's managed under the leadership of Rick Rieder. Rick Rieder is our CIO of Global Fixed Income. Last year, he won Morningstar's award for outstanding portfolio manager. So a lot of notoriety for Rick Rieder and sort of his management of the fund. Now, BINC, we call it BINC. So BINC seeks to enhance the yield of a portfolio of bonds through what I would call really a diversified, nimble approach, giving exposure really to harder reach areas of the fixed income markets like high yield, emerging market debt, CLOs, so these sort of like plus sectors. And I think what's unique about BINC and what we're talking to with financial advisors is that BINC can sit alongside core bond exposures, really allowing those advisors to customize exactly how much yield enhancement they want by also staying diversified, right? Complementing their core bond fund. When we think about active strategies, we think about how can active strategies fit well with core index exposures and how that can align with what we're seeing as an emerging trend where today many investors are barbelling their bond exposures by using core bond index funds to get diversified exposure, but then pairing that with an alpha-seeking fund like BINC that delivers really a unique source of return. So, you mentioned, successful or not, BINC's early success has really provided a strong example of the market's appetite for active ETFs. It was launched last year. It almost has almost $2 billion in AUM already and really has handily outperformed the AG this year. So I would characterize that as a success.
Okay, let's shift from BINC to the BlackRock Large Cap Value ETF, BLCV. I challenge you, Danny, to come up with a word for BLCV. But first, it was launched in May. It's got 7.3 million, which to me sounds like pocket change to BlackRock. And whenever I hear somebody launching an active value strategy, I always think, it just feels like you're climbing the steep side of the mountain, unless you're Warren Buffett. But can you give us an idea of what this where you see this strategy fitting in?
Sure. Challenge not accepted to sort of give you a name for BLCV, but I will say it makes for a nice, acronym, BlackRock Large Cap Value, right? So sometimes we think about tickers and names like BINC, and then sometimes we think about them in acronyms. So there you go. And I will not try to pronounce that. BLCV, that's managed under the leadership of Tony DeSpirito, and Tony's our global CIO of fundamental equities. And I think that just speaks to the breadth of BlackRock's platform. I know BlackRock has a fair amount of assets sitting with index exposures through iShares and other institutional accounts, but we have a just robust lineup of very strong performing active managers. So, BLCV, this ETF really expands on, what we would consider best-in-class lineup of value funds, covering traditional, that complement traditional index strategies and, really whether it's a quantitative or factor-based approach. Actively managed solutions that really select stocks that look priced attractively relative to the fundamentals is the bread and butter for Tony and his team. And, when we talk about BLCV specifically, this fund is seeking to outperform, and it's mostly through the selection of value stocks with an uplift in quality characteristics. We think about, quality balance sheets, strong cash flows. That's really the focus on quality that is germane to sort of the strategy and is really important today. Like we can debate, where are we at with whether we're going to enter a recession or not, or an economic soft landing. But historically, high value quality companies have really done well during like slowdowns. But when you think about, you mentioned the AUM, right? We're in early days, and we know that many times the success of an active product is contingent on performance, but if I can point to anything, our early results are very promising. BLCV is outperforming the Russell 1000 Value, its benchmark, by almost 800 basis points since it launched last year. So we're not even a year in, and you've already seen a high degree of outperformance. So we're really enthused about the prospects based on the strong performance. And, when you've got strong performance like that, it makes it easier to climb that mountain that you just alluded to. And I would agree, it's not a it's tough to see success there, and it's going to be contingent on results. And I think early days, the results have been there.
Danny, we've been talking a lot about active ETFs, but I'm looking at the numbers right now on Bloomberg, and it looks like BlackRock has about $2.7 trillion in U.S. listed ETF assets under management, but only about $17.5 billion in active ETFs. Do you think that number can get significantly larger?
We do, and as the industry continues to grow, we want to participate in the industry growth, and we've got a lot of active managers who've been extremely successful here, but maybe not through the lens of the ETF structure. And so I think we are enthused as a firm about the prospects here, and I do believe we can grow there. And when you sort of like call out those numbers, it speaks to the incredible success that we've had in bringing our scale to investors. Has mostly been through index exposures, but we have just a world-class lineup of active managers that again can benefit through this sort of resurgence of active through the ETF structure, right? Today, there's about in the US industry, it's rapidly growing. Over the few short years, it's emerged as one of the fastest growing categories within the industry. There's about $590 billion in active strategies in the US. And as you mentioned, that's not as large as the index. It's today, it's just 7% of total ETF assets. So, we think we're in pretty early innings here. And if you look at just the last few years of what has been launched, it's many asset managers out there launching active ETFs. In fact, today, 40% of all ETFs listed in the US are actively managed. So we've seen that sort of pick up from a much smaller base. And in terms of what we've been doing historically, when we thought about ETF innovation, we were focused really on how can we deliver different index-based strategies. But clearly, from the fact that last year we launched 19 active ETFs across fixed income, multi-asset, and equities, we've been focused on this sort of idea that ETFs can no longer be synonymous with indexing. And really providing our best ideas with the benefits and the convenience of being within the ETF wrapper, we're really packaging and preparing ourselves for how do we get the best investment ideas out there to clients who are using ETFs. So, there's a lot of opportunity here for BlackRock to bring more solutions to clients. And what we're finding is clients are consuming diversified strategies in different ways, whether it's in mutual funds or ETFs, and we're just sort of continuing to offer that choice to investors.
And Danny, do you have a sense of what, new active ETFs you might launch going forward?
A great question there. At this point, yeah, it wouldn't really be germane for me to comment on future launches. But I would reiterate what we just talked about. We've been busy. We've been busy unlocking access across our entire platform. And there's obviously more to go for us. I mentioned earlier, we launched 19 active ETFs last year. We've started off our conversation talking about target date ETFs, those sort of outcome-oriented solutions. We've launched in areas like buffers and different areas there. So I think what you can expect from iShares is that we'll continue to find really new ways to innovate for our clients, listen to our clients, and where we can bring our scale and our breadth and our IP, and it sort of meets the intersection of client needs, we're going to continue, to invest in those areas.
Well, fantastic. Danny, we're going to have to leave it there. You gave us a ton of great insight. Thanks so much for your time. Listeners, I hope you enjoyed this episode. You can find this and all other Exchange Traded Fridays episodes on ETF.com or on any major podcast platform. See you next week.